Real people, real radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. It is Wednesday right now, the 14th day of January 2015. We're about halfway through the week. We're going to make it, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to happen. We're going to get through all this together, I swear. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. As I mentioned, thank you guys also for checking out redpillreports.com. I cannot tell you how much we appreciate it when you guys go check the page out. We try and do our best getting new and relevant information up there for you guys every single day. And love the feedback we're getting about the site. Guys do such a great job making it look nice. And without you guys going and checking it out, we'd all be talking to ourselves here. So definitely appreciate you guys doing that. Also really appreciate those of you guys who are listening to the show every day and passing it along to your friends. The listenership is growing. We're getting a lot of great feedback from listeners and those of you guys hanging out in the chat room also. Love you guys. Love it, love it, love it. Love the interaction. Love the feedback, especially in real time. Gives you guys an opportunity to interact with the guests that we have and ask questions. Obviously, yesterday's show was a big one. We tried to cover a lot of ground very quickly. I just want to remind everybody that the petition that we are asking you guys to sign and also to print out and get in front of other people is at redpillreports.com. There's a link right at the top of the page to take you to that petition. Cannot tell you guys how much we would appreciate you guys signing that and becoming involved with this process. I think having somebody like Susan Lindauer come on the show and talk about the mortgage crisis, derivative leveraging, funding of terrorism through national and international banking institutions, whole debacle. Bigger than 9/11 is what we established yesterday, ladies and gentlemen. So if you want to be on the right side of history, getting on top of that petition, getting it in front of your friends and family, letting people know how important it is that we get our representatives involved with this, even though they've all already been notified, we need to really hold some feet to the fire here. So I want to recommend people go back. If you can, download that show from yesterday, send that show to your friends so people understand just how big this issue is. And please, please sign the petition. Get that going. We got to get some traction on this thing. Anyway, second hour guest today, Kenneth Shorzen Jr. is going to be on the show. He is, of course, a writer with the Daily Economist and also an author. Very, very smart guy, historian. We'll obviously have a lot to talk about with economic developments right now. There's a lot of geopolitical things going on, but man, I'll tell you what, we've been talking about the potential slide of oil for a long time, and it hasn't subsided. I mean, we're really seeing it now. OPEC came out just yesterday, one of their energy ministers, with a pretty startling revelation. Maybe not startling for people who are listening to the program on a regular basis, but certainly showing an agenda of specific targeting now from OPEC. And so we're going to have to talk a lot about that. Obviously, Bitcoin had a major spill yesterday below the $200 mark right now, so that's going to be important to talk about. And on, we'll also probably be talking a little bit about gold, as gold has been shooting up for the last couple of days. Obviously, people are concerned about the Greek potential exit from the euro, so a lot of people are looking for commodities right now, which kind of begs the question why oil isn't following suit and acting like a commodity. But we'll talk about all of that with Kenneth Shorzen Jr. At the 11 o'clock hour, so just about an hour from now. Tomorrow's show, we will have Deborah Tavares on, probably one of the most well-documented investigators when it comes to Agenda 21 and all of the encroachments that are being pushed on us by the powers that shouldn't be. So we will be definitely looking forward to that conversation tomorrow. A lot of people tune in to what Deborah has to say. She's, as I said, incredibly well-documented, very respected in the industry. It's our privilege and pleasure to be able to bring her information to you guys out there. And then on Friday, Gary Milievsky is going to be on the show. Gary Milievsky is the gentleman who brought Snoopwall to the world, which is an encrypted messaging platform. Snoopwall is a they have an application that will allow you to look at the applications on your phone and determine whether or not they are aggregating information about you. That's what Snoopwall is all about. And obviously, the motif of exploiting this Charlie Hebdo disaster for to fight against encryption, that motif is in full swing right now. We're seeing it happen in the United States. It's happening across Europe. This fight against encrypted technology and your privacy has now reached the new level. We've gone, you know, DEFCON 4 with this thing. So obviously, Gary and I will be talking quite a bit about not only how to protect your privacy, but maybe going forward, some of the things you might have to do to ensure your privacy, and some of the things that we need to be doing. I did have a quick update I need to give right now. I'm going to be calling on the listeners to be throwing some good vibes and some prayers towards Sheriff Mack today. He has got a developing health situation that happened yesterday. It does not seem to be incredibly serious right now, but I do want people to be including him in your prayers. And if you're not a prayer type person, sending of the good vibes, do all that for Sheriff Mack right now. He could really use it, so I would appreciate that. Thank you guys out there who are following suit on that for me. I think that was pretty much everything I needed to cover before we get into the show today. Again, if you guys are in the chat room, I love you guys. And if you have any questions about articles that we're going to cover or about you know, things with the guests, whatnot, please feel free to put them in there, and I'll do my best to be bouncing back and forth so we can have a communication about what we're talking about. Blah blah blah. Okay, so let's move on to national news right now, because I'm sure many of you know lots of stuff going on. The world is still spinning, and we didn't get it all sorted out over the last 24 hours. Right now, Zero Hedge is reporting that a record crowd showed up in a German anti-Islam rally and actually forced Merkel to urge tolerance amongst her people. So we're talking about Germany right now. And in Germany, citizens are increasingly worried, with about 57% of non-Muslims seeing Islam as a threat. And these fears prompted, according to Bloomberg, about 25,000 people to turn out for an anti-Islam rally last night in the eastern city of Dresden. Protesters were demanding tighter immigration laws, measures to fight religious preachers of hatred, and a zero-tolerance policy for immigrants who commit crimes. Angela Merkel has urged tolerance after the rally, warning that some of the organizers have quote-unquote hatred in their hearts, but it appears that the slippery slope has begun, summed up by one 73-year-old German saying, "I would like a lot of money for a program to pay Muslims to go home." So that is right now the mentality of a predominant amount of people in Germany, and it's coming because a large number of refugees have been arriving in Germany, mainly from the Middle East and Africa, and that number has actually surged by almost 60% this year. The government right now estimating about 200,000 people, refugees entering the country. So right now about 61% of the German population says that Islam is not compatible with life in the West, and this is up from 52% only 3 years ago. The country has 4 million Muslims out of a population of about 81 million. So a lot of frustration going on in Germany right now, and people unfolding onto the streets to voice their concerns about what is going on. Let's see here. Moving on to, there's been a major massacre over the weekend in Nigeria, and not very many people are covering this story, which was surprising, so I wanted to make sure we brought it up today. But the Nigerian terrorist group Boko Haram is back in the news right now. They apparently launched their deadliest massacre to date in Borno, Nigeria, last week. The militants shot civilians indiscriminately and torched their homes, putting the death toll in this one attack at about 2,000. We're talking about, you know, the equivalent roughly of a 9/11 event taking place in Nigeria right now. And a local official told the BBC that Baga, which is a town of about 10,000 people, had been burnt down and it is now virtually non-existent. The Borno state official said the town is quite simply just gone. And in the wake of its most recent successes, Boko Haram now controls 11 local government units there, including some 20,000 square miles in the northern states of Yobe and Borno, which are home to more than 1.5 million inhabitants, according to the British Daily Telegraph. The insurgency appears to have largely driven the Nigerian government out of Borno, rendering 20 of the 27 districts inaccessible to the government and to international aid agencies, according to the Borno State Emergency Management Agency. Perhaps 30,000 Nigerians have been displaced as a result of the fighting around Baga, adding to the some 1.7 million refugees produced by the fighting between the government and Boko Haram insurgents beginning all the way back in 2009. Thousands of refugees have fled across the border into Chad, with some 1,000 remaining stranded on an island in the center of Lake Chad, according to the UN statements on Friday. And The Guardian actually goes on saying that reporting, why is it so hard to get media coverage here, I guess, is what they're trying to cover now. So The Guardian says in relation to that question that reporting in Nigeria is very, very difficult because journalists themselves targeted by Boko Haram, and unlike in Paris, people on the ground are very isolated there and struggle to have access to the internet and other communications. So attacks by the Boko Haram have disrupted communications even further, which means that there is an absence of an online community able to share news, photo, and video reports of the news as it unfolds. So that's why we're having such a difficult time getting validation of this event, first of all, and any kind of continuing quality coverage of Boko Haram and what's going on in Nigeria right now. But obviously a major tragedy unfolding last week and over the weekend in Nigeria. So we will have to keep an eye on that as well. Moving on to news from Baghdad right now. The American-led forces launched 19 airstrikes against the Islamic State militants in Syria and Iraq. This is according to the U.S. military on Sunday. Of the 10 airstrikes in Syria, 9 hit ISIS targets near the town of Kobani on the Turkish border, and the other Syria strike hit an ISIS position near Abu Kamal, which is closer to Iraq. The 9 airstrikes inside of Iraq hit ISIS forces near Erbil, Mosul, Sinjar, and al-Assad, according to that statement, and all of the airstrikes took place between Saturday morning and Sunday morning. So still fighting back against ISIL in Iraq and Syria. Good news for those of us who are hoping that Iraq can pull themselves out of the gutters here. Moving on to another story here. The EU is set right now to allow GM crops to be grown in Britain. So this is kind of a heads up to you kids over there in Britain. The Parliament is today expected to clear the way for genetically modified, otherwise known as Frankenfood crops, to be grown in Britain. The new rule allow Britain to grow crops that have been banned in other EU countries. So according to the Mail Online, MEPs will vote to clear the block on growing controversial genetically modified GM crops that has effectively stopped commercial cultivation for a decade. The new rules will allow each country to decide for itself. Now, this is unusual because they actually passed this rule already in the EU's body that allowed each country to make its own decision about whether or not they would be, growing GM. But it does look like right now that the British government is going to go ahead and start moving towards planting GM this year. And then in a similar story, but a better news type of story, Germany is banning right now, banning the use of GM. So again, falling back on that EU initiative from the summer, that gave the 12 member states freedom to ban GM from being cultivated, even if one of the EU members decided that they wanted it, or if the entire EU bloc approved it, each member states are still allowed to refuse them if they want to. And so it looks like the German farm minister is getting a lot of pressure from German activists right now who state that socioeconomic reasons should be taken into consideration and to allow the EU nations to ban GM crops outright. And he actually told attendees at a press conference held in Berlin that he is going to hold back on approving GM right now. So it looks like Germany going to be following suit with Russia and that they are not interested in GM. Also, we reported, I believe, last week that China had refused a huge, huge shipment of GM corn from the United States, something like a trillion tons. We were talking a big, big deal. So a lot of countries stepping up against genetically modified food. Probably a good thing if you're in Germany, not a good thing if you're in the UK right now. So if you're in the UK, maybe time to get off the couch and start getting motivated here. More fallout from the shooting that took place in Paris. Rotterdam's mayor, I got to tell you, man, I knew I liked Rotterdam when I was there. Beautiful, beautiful country. But Rotterdam has a Muslim mayor. A lot of people may not know that. And he took to the television last night and essentially told anybody in his country who would identify with violent radical Islams to pack your bags and a word that I can't say on the radio starts with an F, off, essentially. He said, pack your bags and F off. I love that. I think that's absolutely outstanding. So he's born in Morocco, mayor of the Dutch port city of Rotterdam. He said in a television appearance just last night that Muslims like himself who choose to live in the West should adopt a more tolerant worldview or pack your bags and F off. That's a mayor for you. And he was live on Dutch TV when he said that. He goes on, he says, if you don't like freedom, for heaven's sakes, pack your bags and leave. And he says, if you do not like it here because some humorists you don't like are making a newspaper, then I say you can F off. I love it. Fantastic. That's a mayor I would vote for. And especially interesting because he himself is a Muslim. Again, I think a lot of Muslims around the world look at the radical Islamists the same way that a lot of Christians here in America look at the Baptist Church, the guys that picket funerals of troops and things like that. Same deal. You know, they're just as unusual to us, I would imagine, as the radical elements are to most normal Muslims. But again, just a thought that I had. Let's see here. But another radical cleric, this gentleman's name is Shudari. As actually called the Charlie Hebdo cover an act of war. He is a radical Islamist cleric, Shudari. He has declared the decision to print a cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad on the cover of Charlie Hebdo's first issue since the Wednesday massacre. He's declared that picture that has come up now is an act of war, which is pretty extreme. The controversial cleric made the statements days after claiming that Muslims did not believe in the freedom of speech, following last week's terror attack in Paris in which 17 people were killed by Islamist gunmen. According to the Islamists, depicting images of the Prophet was an act that warranted capital punishment under Sharia law. And Shudari claimed that the magazine's decision to print the cartoon was attacking the honor of the Prophet and that ridiculing the Prophet of Islam is extremely dangerous. He also describes the decision as an act of blatant provocation, and that he said it should be tried as an act of war in a Sharia court. So, more rhetoric building up there. You know, I have to wonder if this whole thing is a scam, because I don't believe necessarily that the event itself took place, and now watching what the reaction, here's one of the reactions right now, which is to me very startling, but this is David Cameron of the UK, essentially hanging his hat now on this terror attack to push more surveillance bills through. That's the whole name of the game here. And again, we'll talk to Gary Milievsky about this on Friday, but Prime Minister Cameron's pledged now to give new web surveillance powers to intelligence agencies following the alleged historic, horrific terror attack in Paris last week. He appeared to say that he wants to ban any means of digital communication that cannot be snooped on, right? So this is what he says. He says, if I am Prime Minister, I will make sure it is a comprehensive piece of legislation that makes sure we do not allow terrorists a safe place to communicate with each other, right? So that's his, from a campaign speech he gave in Nottingham just yesterday. And he says, are we going to allow a means of communication where it simply isn't possible to do that? His answer to that question, he says, is no, we must not. So if that's the case, it's going to make it really difficult for services like WhatsApp or Snapchat or iMessage to operate in the UK. And last year, it was revealed that the government could already spy on UK citizens using Facebook, Google, Twitter, YouTube, thanks to a loophole in the law. But since then, many of those services have boosted encryption, making it more difficult, something obviously that the intelligence agencies are very unhappy about. So right now, the slippery slope is right in front of us because What is it going to take for them to declare any of us a terrorist, to say that any of our communications need to be snooped by the government as a matter of national security? It seems like David Cameron definitely planning on giving up privacy for national security, or, you know, which drives me crazy that we're in this slippery slope, but here we are. There we are. And a terrorist plot has apparently been uncovered to kill British soldiers, police, and intelligence. That's according to a staff report that just came out this last week. Authorities there on high alert for Islamic State-style beheadings in Britain following counterterrorist officers' detection of jihadist plots to murder British police, intelligence officers, and soldiers. So pretty much just following suit with the same warning that was issued from the State Department here in the United States, talking about law enforcement needing to kind of scrub their social media sites, as well as soldiers around the world not wearing their uniforms when they're in public or if they're going to the airports and things like that. So obviously a little bit more indication that Britain is under that same warning right now, I guess, is what you could say about all of that. And George Soros has made a surprise visit to the Ukraine back from Kiev to discuss the country's economic reconstruction this week. Soros met with top government officials to talk about fighting corruption. Ha ha! Boy, is that ironic or what? As the UK faces an acute economic crisis and could be on the verge of a debt default, Soros had a meeting with the Ukraine Parliament members on Monday to talk about the effectiveness of the fight against corruption and other issues. Obviously, he wants to be as actively involved with the corruption as he possibly can. He spent something like $4 billion over the last few years in Kiev. Part of the main reason that the government there fell was because of how much money Soros pumped into, the popular uprising, essentially, was funded by George Soros and his organization. But anyway, at this meeting with Soros, the parliament members discussed the idea of creating a foreign direct investment fund in Ukraine to prop up the country's ailing economy, and the group also discussed who would be the chair of the Anti-Corruption Bureau. George Soros also published last week an article in the New York Review of Books calling on Europe and the West to put together another $50 billion rescue package for the new Ukraine, upping his October suggestion of $20 billion. Soros is the 30th richest person in the world, according to Forbes ranking, and has a personal fortune at about $19 billion as of March of 2013. And the billionaire also made a name for himself as the man who broke the Bank of England by engaging in questionable Forex hedging, betting against the sterling, and made himself more than $1 billion in one day back in September of 1992. And some speculate that Soros had been the beneficiary of insider trading information while making investments, and in 2002, a Paris court actually found Soros guilty of using inside information to profit from a 1988 takeover stock deal from the bank Societe Generale. So not the best dude in the world, Mr. Soros, and still meddling around quite a bit in Kiev, probably not to the benefit of the population there, but that's what's happening there. And then on the other side of the border, or the other side of the country, there, blasts in the area of Donetsk Airport illuminated the sky on Tuesday as heavy fighting between the Ukraine's army and the local militia continued throughout the day, and the situation has significantly deteriorated in the last 24 hours, according to the OSCE mission. Currently, active fighting is ongoing across the whole perimeter of Donetsk, and gunfire is heard in all city districts, especially active fighting is in the airport, according to a spokesman of the People's Council of Donetsk, with this the self-proclaimed republic there in the eastern side of Ukraine. So obviously, the people in Kiev hoping that the shelling in Donetsk and the republic area that will stop. It's going to keep them from being able to join NATO and all of the other ancillary reasons that they would really like this problem to go away. Probably doesn't need to mention the fact that over 1 million people have been displaced in the fighting since this began last summer. It's just absolutely unbelievable that we still see all this going on in the Ukraine, and it's not getting any better anytime soon. So that's what's happening there. We got to go to a break here in just a few minutes, but I can get into a little bit of the national news right now. Kind of an extreme story coming out, and it's hosted up at redpillreports.com right now about Obama declaring war on extremism. You can find this report, as I said, at redpillreports.com. So, you know, this idea that we need to fight extremism now, especially given what happened in Paris, is going to have a lot of ramifications. Obviously, we're going to see a bolstering to the cybersecurity program here in the United States. That's going to be part of it. We're going to see a major fight against encrypted emails, but they're also going to ramp up the rhetoric against quote-unquote extremists. And there's a pretty massive list of things or traits that you might have that could be considered an extremist. You could be considered an extremist by the government. So we're going to go over a list of these things when we come back from the break, but I wanted you guys to know, because this list is long and full, that I probably won't be able to go through all of it. But there's some pretty, I mean, I can't get through the first dozen without identifying with, well, about a dozen. So probably not good going forward in the future for J to the D here. But that's all I can say about that right now. We got to go to a break in a minute or so. Want to keep you guys up to date, though, on the headlines that we're going to be covering in the second hour. There is a pretty big story coming out of the tech world right now as the trial has begun for the alleged Silk Road founder, Ross Ulbricht. Now, why is that an important story? Well, I want you guys to stay tuned because, again, he allegedly was the runner of the dark website called the Silk Road. And he is, as I said, the trial is beginning this week. Very, very important if we talk about this because it could have a lot of ramifications. Maine right now is getting ready to introduce or has introduced some legislation that I think is going to be absolutely amazing. So I want to give some support to that. And also the kids, Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton over at True Stream Media have put together a fantastic article about how you can take back your life, 10 ways to opt out of the system. So we'll talk about that as well. Some everyday items that you can use for prepping. And I've got some silly stories also to cover towards the end of the show today. And Kenneth Shorgan Jr. will be joining us in a half an hour. So keep it right here, ladies and gentlemen. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast from the 14th day of January. We'll be right back, guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
A sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark. As ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky, and you realize you are not prepared.
I am telling you to take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to My Patriot Supply. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only PatentUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Lip Free FM with Nathan Frazier.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in, and thank you guys for sticking with us through that three-minute break. We're moving into the second segment of our news segment today. A reminder that Kenneth Shorzen Jr. will be joining us in about a half an hour, talking about all things economic and geopolitical. But right now, hot on the geopolitical spectrum, or on the hot on the plate of Barack Obama, is this whole extremist fight thing now. And I'm not really sure which way to take this thing. So first probably ought to be done is we ought to identify what in the heck an extremist is, because obviously in the wake of the horrible terror attacks at the offices of Charlie Hebdo in France, Barack Obama is now speaking very boldly about the need to win the war against quote-unquote extremists, and he has announced now plans to host a major global political summit on extremism next month. And on the surface, that sounds pretty good, right? But what precisely how are we supposed to determine whether someone is an extremist or not? By what criteria are we to judge these people? So your definition of an extremist might be very, very, very different from the definition that Barack Obama is using. So when you do a Google search, you will find that one who resorts or advocates extreme action would be somebody who would be considered as an extremist, somebody who holds extreme or fanatical political or religious views, right? Those are words that make sense to me. According to Wikipedia, extremism is an ideology, particularly in politics or religion, considered to be far outside the mainstream attitudes of a society or to violate common moral standards. So extremism can take many forms, including political, religious, and economic. Please notice, though, that neither of these definitions uses the word violence, all right? So in this day and age, you can be considered an extremist simply based on what you believe. And as you will see, we're going to go over this list right now. There are actually probably tens of millions of Americans that could be considered extremists or potential terrorists according to U.S. government documents. I want to go over some of these things. This is a big list. There's 72 of these things. But let's see how many of these we can tick off that some of you guys might actually relate to. Those people out there who talk about individual liberties, you might be an extremist. Those people who advocate for states' rights, those who want to quote-unquote make the world a better place, quote-unquote the colonists who sought to free themselves from British rule, those people who are interested in quote-unquote defeating the communists, those that believe that the interests of one's own nation are separate from the interests of other nations or the common interests of all nations. Anyone holds a political ideology that considers the state to be an unnecessary, harmful, or undesirable. Wow, I'd be definitely probably right in line with most of these so far. Anyone that possesses an intolerance towards other religions, anyone that takes action to fight against the exploitation of the environment or of animals, you could be considered a potential terrorist. Anybody who is anti-Muslim, anybody who relates to the Patriot Movement, members of the Family Research Council, members of the American Family Association, those people that believe that Mexico, Canada, and the United States are secretly planning to merge in a European-like union, that will become known as the North American. And that's so well qualified at this point. That is, I mean, if you look at what the corporations are doing, we essentially have already got corporate unification of America and Canada and the United States. Look at the Keystone Pipeline that they're trying to bring in. Look at the AT&T merger with Mexico's cell phone industry that just happened a few months ago. Look at how much power we share back and forth. There's one electrical grid that connects us both. So if you don't think that we're moving towards a European-style union, you're mental, because the corporations have been planning since that whole security and prosperity partnership was signed back, I think in like 1996 or 99 or something, I don't even know, but I'm telling you, whether or not it's on mainstream news every day doesn't necessarily negate the fact that the corporations are moving in that way. Let's see, how about some other ones here? Anyone that believes in government conspiracies to the point of paranoia, what does that mean? People who believe that we can see a history of the government using false flags against its people, and those of us who decide not to go to the Super Bowl because I don't want to be in a group of people where, you know, in a country where there's propensity for the government or bad apples in the government, if you like that line of reasoning, to try and blow people up or kill them. You know, we've seen that happen over and over and over again. So is my desire not to go get on an airplane right now part of, you know, does that mean I believe in conspiracy theories to a point of paranoia? Well, I suppose that it does, because I'm not going to go do those things. So there you go. Anybody that attends rallies or extremist causes, I think that the WTO rally probably follows through on that one, so I can check that off my list as well. Anybody that is frustrated with mainstream ideologies, I think that probably encompasses every single person that's listening to the program right now, because why else would you be listening to the program? Citizens that have bumper stickers that are patriotic or anti-UN, anybody that refers to an army of God, those that are anti-global, those that are suspicious of centralized federal authority, those who are reverent of individual liberty, those who just generally believe in conspiracy theories, and the list goes on and on and on. Returning veterans is one of them. That's pretty pretty shocking. Not really, if you've been paying attention, but the fact that, you know, they're coming out in government documents now to admit that returning veterans are a threat to the status quo. And that's really what it comes down to, is that these people are going to be defending the status quo. They want centralized banking. They want criminal banking elements all over the planet. They want to have nothing get in the way of them doing exactly what it is that they want to do. So anybody who has uncovered what it is that they're doing and wants to step up and talk about it, obviously, we're going to see a crackdown on us, essentially, is what's going on with that, ladies and gentlemen. So again, that whole list can be found at redpillreports.com. I read the whole list, and I didn't see being a super awesome motorcycle rider on there, but Robert did put a picture of the chopper that I built on that website. I guess a lot of chopper riders were kind of cut from a different drain and a different grain. We're a little bit proud of our independence. So perhaps that's the connection there. But if you guys want to see, just as an ancillary, as a side note, the chopper that I built, it's on that article up at redpillreports.com. Hope you guys like it. We'll see. Okay, moving on. Let's see here. Maine, I wanted to talk about this this thing that Maine is doing right now. They have now introduced a bill called LD4. It was introduced by State Representative Deborah Sanderson on the 5th of January. This bill, introduced into the Maine State House, would authorize the farming, production, and sale of industrial hemp in the state, which would effectively nullify the federal prohibition on the same once put into effect. Again, it's called LD4. If you are in Maine, I would highly recommend getting on the horn or sending some email to support this particular House bill as it goes through, because there's really not anything in the country that we could do, in my opinion, that would have a more profound effect on our economy than opening up the hemp market here. And I'm not talking about marijuana legalization. I'm talking about industrial hemp. A lot of people don't understand that we're probably missing out on about $500 million a year just in hemp alone, just in textile market. This has nothing to do with the hemp seeds that are incredibly nutritious, with the hemp oil that's highly sought after. And right now, Canada and China have got about a two-decade head start on us in terms of hemp cultivation, and it's really unusual how absolutely oppressive our government is against the, you know, moving back into hemp, which is obviously something that we should do. See, you know, I think it was Kentucky last year was the first state that got approved to try to get hemp moving in their state, and the DEA actually confiscated all of their seeds. The state of Kentucky had to sue the DEA just to get their hemp seeds so that they could do their trial go at getting the hemp plant, you know, making sure it was viable again in Kentucky, which obviously it's going to be. It couldn't not be. But the issue right now is because it's been outlawed for so long that the seed stock that the farmers used to use to support little industries like the Navy and things like that, all that seed stock has been wiped out. So we've, you know, now the goal is to once again try and find which varieties of hemp are going to grow in which regions. And so that's kind of what Kentucky was trying to do now. But, you know, our country, again, DEA confiscates the seeds. The state had to sue the federal government to get the seeds back. But in Canada, the president actually tours hemp factory plants where they produce oil and they produce hemp seed for ingestion. And same thing in China. You know, these guys are the presidents there are in full support because they understand how much money that industry is producing and how easy the plant is to grow, how much it does not depend. You know, there's no pesticides needed to grow it. There's very little fertilizer needed to grow it. It's a fantastic soil recovery plant, not to mention all of the industry that we can get from it. I really hope Maine gets on board with this. I hope Missouri gets on board with this. Again, all these states really need to start figuring out what's going to be best for each individual state. And I think, the hemp movement in the country is going to be really pivotal in that. So I'm hoping that will be moving forward. I have some information about a Fort Hood soldier that was found dead on his doorstep yesterday. There was a lot of speculation about whether or not it could have been Ebola-induced because he had recently returned from West Africa. He was actually one of the soldiers that was there, that Barack had sent there to try and help deal with the Ebola crisis there in West Africa. But the tests have now come back for him, and the presence of Ebola has been deemed negative. Still very unusual situation, and they're not really releasing a lot of information. We don't know what the soldier's name is, but the fact that he was found dead on his doorstep, he had requested an emergency medical leave to be with his family. That's about the most information that we have been able to gather so far. But so kind of unusual. He was on the 21-day self-monitoring, you know, motif that we see with all of the soldiers that have come back, did go on a medical emergency and was found dead at right next to his front door out in the front yard. But again, no indication of what actually happened to this gentleman. And I wonder if we will actually get any information coming forward or if this story will just kind of disappear into the woodwork. But certainly Ebola is still a concern around the world. And, I'm not trying to be a doomer and a gloomer here, but if you're not prepped for that, at least have some storable food around just in case something happens, because, again, you just never really know right now what's going on. There was a major event that happened Monday evening in Washington, D.C. at the Metro train tunnel as well. One woman actually passed away, two other passengers still in critical condition, as the railway station there or the subway station there was filled with smoke. The source of the smoke is still not known, but the National Transportation Safety Board is currently still conducting investigations. The woman who passed away was reportedly unresponsive with no pulse after CPR was performed on her at the scene, and her identity has not been released yet. But Metro and D.C. Fire Department officials said the two critical patients were being cared for at George Washington University. In all, 84 people were taken to local hospitals, including a firefighter who suffered serious but not life-threatening injuries. The majority of those being treated, roughly 60 people, suffered from smoke inhalation. 40 such cases were being handled at the Howard University Hospital and 20 others at the Washington Hospital Center. So still no indication now as to what actually happened to D.C. It was a major police response. It was all over the police feeds. It was deemed a mass casualty event when it happened by the fire departments there, but luckily, only one person passed away. As I said, the investigation is still ongoing to figure out what is going on or what actually happened there. So that is that's what happened in D.C. A lawmaker now has proposed required classes on gun safety in public school. I love this. It's happening in South Carolina. It's called the Second Amendment Education Act. They are asking to get this act pushed through, but it would require that all public schools in the state provide a three-week course on gun safety with curriculum provided by the National Rifle Association. This bill, which was written by Representatives Alan Clemens, Richard Yao, and Gary Smith, will mandate that all public elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools in South Carolina provide instruction in the Second Amendment and to the United States Constitution for at least 3 consecutive weeks every academic year. I think we should go a step further than that. A lot of people may not know, but in Russia, they teach middle schoolers how to field strip AK-47s and put them back together. And that's what we need to be doing. We need to be teaching kids at a young age how to handle firearms properly so that they can not be mystified by them. And, you know, a lot of kids these days probably have the idea that the idea of the gun in and of itself is an evil thing. And I think that if we can get that message across, that it is not an evil thing, it's actually one of the most important rights that we have, that anybody could have around the world. I think we need to start reinstilling that message into the kids. So I really definitely support South Carolina in this move, and I think if you're there, you should try and support that as well. The IRS has kept an Albuquerque Tea Party in limbo for 5 years after its tax-exempt status application was submitted. We won't get into this whole story, but that's really the nutshell of it right now. 5 years after the Albuquerque Tea Party applied for tax-exempt status under Section 501c4 of the tax code, they still are no closer to being approved or denied than they were the day they mailed in their IRS application on the 29th of December 2009. So IRS stuff still... you know, that's the thing, is unless we actually get people fired at this institution called the IRS, nothing is ever going to change. I mean, look at all of the hubbub that's been made over Lois Lerner's emails, and we know this targeting is going on. And currently, right now, today, as it sits on the 14th day of January, the targeting is still happening, and it's still being carried out, and nothing has changed, which is just absolutely unbelievable to me. So again, IRS has kept the Albuquerque Tea Party in limbo for 5 years now. Man, could you say political agenda or targeting? I wonder. Let's see here. I'm going to jump over into some tech news here because I do want to touch on this this Ross Ulbricht story. Again, he is the alleged founder of the Silk Road. So, okay, what was the Silk Road? For those of you guys who don't know, it was a Bitcoin-enabled online marketplace, right? And it occurred, you had to go through the Tor browser to get there, and it's part of the deep web, or the dark web, as sometimes it's called. But it was essentially an online marketplace for illicit activities. People could buy guns or drugs. There's been speculation about prostitution going on there. But anyway, so it was essentially a marketplace that was undetectable across the World Wide Web, right? So Ross Ulbricht is the gentleman that federal authorities say was the runner of the dark web. So he was essentially the guy that developed the website, and he ran it. Now he is on trial. And so this trial is very, 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 very important because essentially the government's position is saying that he profited from the selling of drugs by running this site. And so there's some ancillary accusations saying that he actually may have discussed murder-for-hire plots to protect the Silk Road. But again, that's kind of been pushed to the way back of the radar in terms of this case. It's not actually even mentioned in the case as far as direct charges that are being brought against him. So essentially what they're doing is they're charging him with money laundering and drug sales, but they don't have any evidence to suggest that he was actually involved with, you know, selling drugs or trafficking. All he was responsible for was running the website. So why is this important? Because this charge... making him responsible for what members were doing on his website obviously flies in the face of how we understand the responsibility falling down on internet service providers. Internet service providers right now and site operators are primarily shielded from the responsibility of being accountable for the actions and speech of their users. That's kind of the whole freedom of speech, freedom to do, freedom of assembly, freedom of doing all the things that you want to do. And, you know, if what happens here is that if they essentially pin some of this illicit activity on Ulbricht for making the platform itself available, that is going to have a chilling effect on the internet that I don't think we have seen before, because then anybody who operates a Bitcoin site, it could be technically charged with whatever those Bitcoins go on to do after the fact. So we're setting a precedent right now with this trial that is pretty significant, and if people aren't paying attention, this has got one of those things that it could just go right by the wayside, and we might never hear about it again. So I want to keep that in the forefront of people's minds going forward, that if this goes the wrong way, it could be very bad for anybody who runs a website, anybody who transacts business online. And anybody who wants to live in a country where the government has to be transparent about the evidence that it has against us, all of those things are kind of under the guise here right now. So definitely an important case that we want to pay attention to. And again, that trial started this week. I believe that jurors are going to be selected, or jurors, the selection of the jury process, I believe, began yesterday. So that's important to keep that in mind. Let's see here. Moving on to a little bit of health news here. Apparently, nap time for toddlers, way more important than most toddlers would have you believe. So people spend more time sleeping as babies than at any other point in their life. But if even if this has been common knowledge for some time, people are now only beginning to understand what a role sleep plays during this key development stage. And the University of Sheffield has researchers which now claim that sleeping is key to learning and forming new memories for infants as young as 12 months old. Babies who don't nap were far less able to repeat what they had been taught only 24 hours earlier. And the findings aren't only important for parents looking for advice on how to manage their babies, but the research also draws parallels between life's dawn and the twilight years, suggesting that more sleep is important for memory consolidation for the elderly and helps keep neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's at bay. So make your kids take more naps, I guess would be the long and the short of it there. But more research to support that napping when you're a child, especially a very young child, very, very key to infant learning and memory consolidation. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Also, a lot of people might not know, but January is Radon Action Month. So I wanted to talk really quickly about radon because it's a silent killer. Do you have it in your home? Who knows? It's scentless. You can't see it, but it can kill you. Last year, about 21,000 people died from lung cancer that was most likely caused from radon, and that's more deaths that were caused from drunk driving. So radon, what is it? It's a naturally occurring gas commonly found in soils, water, and rocks. Obviously colorless, odorless, and tasteless, so it can be very difficult to detect without a proper radon detection kit. It can also be found in water and in the air. The gas moves easily through cracks in rocks and soils and could enter your the lower levels of your home, like the basements, or if you had an earth-sheltered home, it could definitely get you there. So it's important to test your home every 2 years because you can easily find where it's coming from and fill in those cracks and keep your family safe. So again, Radon Action Month this January. So if you are at all concerned, go out and get a radon detection kit. There you go. Heard it here first. California having a pretty big problem with measles right now. Now 26 different cases relating or being tied to the Disneyland outbreak. California has confirmed, as I said, more cases of measles in people who visited Disneyland or its adjacent California Adventure Park last month. Health officials said on Monday they have now raised the number of affected people to 26, and a total of 22 of the cases in California have been linked with visits to the Anaheim parks between the 15th and the 20th of December, including one that arose from direct contact with an already infected person, according to the California Department of Public Health. And additionally, two cases have been confirmed in Ohio, and one case has been confirmed in both Colorado and Washington State. Walt Disney Parks and Resorts officials have said that the company is working with its California Health Department to provide information and assistance. So no idea why the measles outbreak being connected to Disneyland there, but definitely going on. So it could be not a good time to be visiting Disneyland, maybe. I don't know. What do you guys think? Let's see here. What else do we want to talk about? Let's see how much time we got left. All right. We're doing well here. Your tongue, apparently. The texture and appearance of your tongue could say a lot about the state of your heart, of your heart and your health, apparently. And new technology outlined in the International Journal of Biomedical Engineering and Technology suggests that it might be possible for trained physicians to conduct digital analysis of people's tongues in order to diagnose illness. So the colleagues from the VIT University in India successfully have developed a protocol that combines digital imagery of tongue patterns with soft input analysis to determine whether or not a person's tongue can be used, as they say, to assess whether or not a person has a disease or a disease might be present without them knowing it and whether or not they can treat it. According to the summary of the team's findings, a smooth or beefy-looking tongue may indicate that a person is deficient in B vitamins, iron, or folate, And if the tongue appears to be blacker than normal, a parent may be damaged from taking too many antibiotics or perhaps has HIV or fungal overgrowth, and ulcers on the tongue can also indicate the presence of colitis or Crohn's disease. So very interesting stuff, you know, finding more indications that there are other ways to determine whether or not we are healthy that go beyond the typical regular doctor method there. Let's talk a little bit about some items that you might have in your home right now that you can use for survival and prepping. I hardly ever get down into the home farm and garden section of the news, but I want you guys to know that we do have a home farm and garden section, and especially now that we're moving into spring, there's probably going to be a lot more of the gardening type news. I don't know if you guys out there know, but I'm a huge fan of the straw bale gardening. Love it. I'm planning on doing, I want to say I'm going to do 25 bales this year. I'm going to go completely straw bale and do no in-ground gardening at all because I don't like bending over. And last year, although my neighbors were very, very inconsiderate in allowing their trees to grow a bunch of leaves and causing a bunch of shade to come over my garden, most of my gardening in the straw bales did really, really well. So again, I'm going to be doing that again this year. We'll have more gardening news and farm news and home type news, but a lot of the prepper stuff that I try and find gets stuffed down into that home, farm, and garden section also. But let's talk about a couple of items here. Tampons always seem to come up, right? You can fluff up a tampon, make a good tinder, left whole. They're excellent for plugging, penetrating wounds. You can also use them to filter water, not more than once, but you can also use them as a wick, so that might be one thing. Shoelaces, probably don't need to say too much about those. Lots of cordage options for that. Garbage bags, you can really get what you pay for with bin bags, so go with good quality thick ones. You can use them as a jacket. You can use them as a ground sheet. You can braid them into a cord. They can make great rain catchers, temporary water carriers. Condoms can be cut down and used as tourniquets. You can also use them as mini dry packs. That's super important. Duct tape, clear plastic bags, all of the stuff you guys want to use. Paper clips, improvised fishing hooks. You can also use one to open an iPhone if you have to. Anyway, lots more stuff at redpillreports.com. Go to the show section. Find out a little bit more about Kenneth Shorten Jr. before he joins us in the next few minutes. And we can have a great discussion. Plus all the articles I couldn't get to today because there's just never enough of them. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you guys for being in the chat room right now. Thank you guys for checking out redpillreports.com. Right back after this 15-minute break. See you in a second.
At Truth Frequency Radio, we bring you the very best personalities in the independent media without the corporate influence and with limited commercial interruption. Over the past year, Truth Frequency Radio has become one of the fastest-growing media outlets in the world, and we owe it all to you. That's why, with every donation of $30 or more, we'll send you your very own Survive Drive as a way of saying thanks for your continued support. The Survive Drive is jam-packed with nearly 600 ebooks to help you survive everything from everyday life to major disasters. Donate today and we'll continue to wage war against the powers that shouldn't be. Again, thanks for your support and for making Truth Frequency Radio your choice for news without the hate, hype, and fear.
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran. demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
This is the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that three-minute break. I want to remind everybody you can go and check out all the news that I forgot to get to at redpillreports.com under the show section, and you'll also be able to find out quite a bit of information about Ken Shorjan Jr., who is our very special guest today. I'm very excited to be welcoming him back to redpillreports.com and to the broadcast today. It's been a couple of weeks since the last time I spoke to him, and for those of you guys who don't know Ken, he is a historian in his primary field of study. He's also an investor in the real world, and he has a very keen perspective on all of the facets of the financial world. He's owned his own business and corporation and has been an investor in many different markets such as securities, real estate, currency trading, and international trust. His main goal right now is to help provide us with the true understanding of the markets and the economy and to give us all information that will help us make our own decisions in these pretty safe to say troubling and oftentimes fascinating times regarding our economic decisions. He is not a certified economic financial advisor, and his only goal is to give us true information by which you can see things as they happen, and in many cases before they happen. So I want to give the disclaimer here that we don't offer any financial or legal advice here at redpillreports.com. This is obviously just for your education and entertainment purposes only, but I believe it will be very educational and entertaining because Ken is both of those things in spades. So, Ken, thank you very much for joining us on the program today.
Morning, JD, and pleasure to be here.
Well, I think it's been, about 3 weeks since the last time we spoke, and my goodness, so much can change in just such a short amount of time. Obviously, I didn't really cover any of the economic news during the news segment today, but the price of oil, man, I know it's been brought up, and I believe that we'll probably have to continue to bring it up for a while, but this thing is starting to really show some propensity to stay low for a while. I'm not sure if you saw the article about the EAU coming out and essentially admitting overnight that the target of this whole price slide was, in fact, the shale industry. I mean, they almost said it verbatim last night, you know what I mean? And that, to me, that clearly shows this targeting wasn't necessarily about Russia, it wasn't necessarily about Iran and Venezuela, but it seems to be more about the United States. What do you think about what's going on with all this, Ken?
No, it's not about Russia. And, you know, all the rhetoric that you're seeing in the Western press about Russia is this and their economy and blah, 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 blah. The thing you got to remember about Russia is they have no outside debts. They have no debts around the world. Okay. So their currency is only being affected when they try to do imports or exports.
Okay.
Their currency is not being affected inside the country. Because what is oil sold in? It's sold in dollars. So they're getting a full, fresh supply of hard currency every single day that they're selling oil. So really what it is they're, since their ruble is pegged to the dollar still, these commodity prices that are based in dollars, i.e. oil and natural gas, that are dropping, that's what's affecting the ruble. So I was hearing a interesting interview the other night, and somebody was saying this about Russia. The more that the Russian ruble gets devalued, the more that Russia will go back to creating its own industry and not having as many exports and imports. Now, back in the Soviet Union days, they didn't really have a lot of international trade. They did oil somewhat, and that's how they were, because oil was their only lifeblood to the world. Everything was internal, you know, the five-year plans and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They really didn't have trade of anything outside of oil with the rest of the world, and that's why it was easy for the U.S. to go after the price of oil back then and take down the Soviet Union. It doesn't work that way today. Russia is not isolated from the world. They have a $400 billion 30-year oil and natural gas contract with China. China's already investing in their economy to build the pipelines, the South Stream, the South Stream's been shut down. They're going to go through Turkey now. They're in combination for the Silk Road trade, which is going to be a free trade zone, which is going to be open to all currencies outside the dollar. So what you said about Russia is absolutely correct. Now, here's what another reason why it's apropos that the OPEC and the Middle Eastern countries are going after the shale. If you remember back in, and this has a little bit to do with the terror attack, I believe, that occurred last week in France.
Okay.
If you remember earlier this year, there was a hijacking of a Saudi prince right there in daylight, broad daylight in France, in Paris.
Oh, I do remember that, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, what the mainstream media did is, these hijackers took about $250,000 worth of euros, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and some unknown documents. No, they were really after the documents, because what the Saudi prince had documents of secret meetings between the Saudi Arabia and Russia. And all of this regarding oil and with China, this is happening as a combination agreement between them. China is all for it because China is soaking up all the excess oil,
okay,
at cheap prices. Russia is watching the U.S. and Europe. And really what Russia is doing is they're watching Europe start to collapse because they know they're not big enough to affect the United States. However, it's the Saudis and OPEC who have control over the price of oil through the petrodollar agreement, and they're the ones who are saying, hey, United States, your only export pretty much is oil, and you've built it up because of the shale and fracking. Well, if we lower the price below $60, which is now even well below that, yeah, about
$45,
right, your fracking industry is going to go completely, you know, tango uniform. But it's even more than that. The fracking industry is completely based on debt. There's not been real capital investment in the fracking industry. There's $200 billion worth of junk debt and junk bonds and derivatives funded the fracking industry. So if you take down the fracking industry, what all of a sudden happens? All of this debt, $200 billion worth, completely collapses. And it starts triggering other collapses, other bond defaults, other derivative defaults. That's what the whole thing is about. And so, yeah, they're at the point right now because we had the first bank or capital investor in fracking declare for bankruptcy already.
We had
the first of the $200 billion.
Last week we did, yeah, but 66 more rigs have gone down this week, apparently.
Oh, not only that, in Canada, mm-hmm, Canada has shut down their rigs from about 435,
yep,
to 156,
yep,
in the past 3 months.
Yep, I was going to cover that article. There's a great article from Mining this morning that says that they are going to be Alberta especially, looking at a recession now because they can't do it. And we had, I think it was the energy guy from North Dakota saying that half of the shale oil industry, you know, producers there are already below water. And that's the thing is, I think the last time we spoke, we were still in the mid 70s. So all of this was kind of speculation as to what the fallout was going to be. But I think at 45, there's nobody in the world who's going to be able to say, you know, that, you know, there's still some number there that people can be profitable at. I think that number disappeared once we broached that $60 mark. From all the people that I've talked to, I would think 45 is just going to be absolutely amazingly bad going forward. And then especially now we get the idea that the Saudi prince is there saying we'll never see $100 oil again. And I kind of want to ask you, too, about, you know, there's a lot of speculation about OPEC being effective, or even if they're an actual organization anymore. Somebody was mentioning to me the other day, I want to say it was Jordan, that's now started to do deals directly with China for the yuan. So are we seeing the demise of OPEC officially, you think?
Yeah, but you got to remember, OPEC was pretty much, interestingly enough, you know who started OPEC?
Who's that?
In 1967? Muammar Gaddafi.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was Muammar Gaddafi who got together with all the Arab oil states and said, we need to create a coalition because you were coming out of the time when colonial Europe pretty much dominated each individual nation state. Mm-hmm. And after the Brits were pretty much ended as an empire at the Suez Canal, the end of the Six-Day War, which solidified Israel, and the U.S. was already involved in Vietnam, then the Middle East countries saw that vacuum and said, you know what, we're going to create a co-op here, a cartel, and we're going to declare control the price of oil. And that's how they were able to do it, because France, Britain were declining as an empire. They didn't have the power and the fortitude to stand up to these breaking away Arab states. And the U.S. was already involved in Vietnam and was sort of going into, you know, isolationism and activism. So it was the perfect time to do that. And when the real reason behind the oil crisis in 1973 was because Nixon took us off the gold standard in 71.
Right.
And so it really destroyed, since the dollar was a reserve currency, it started really devaluing, exporting inflation everywhere. So OPEC said, you know what, we're getting back at you. See, the currency isn't the real lifeblood of the world. Oil is the lifeblood of the world. If you control the oil, you control pretty much the economic direction of where the global economy goes. Mm-hmm. This is why the U.S. was trying to get in. And this is something else. For all the oil and natural gas that the United States produced, they didn't have the facilities or the capabilities to send it to Europe when Russia all of a sudden became sanctioned. Europe still relied too much on Russia.
Okay.
And same thing with Germany. Germany's got 3,000 to 5,000 businesses that do a lot of business in Russia. France has an agricultural side that does a lot of things in Russia. So when Russia said, okay, if you're going to stand with the U.S. on these sanctions, we're just going to do our own retaliatory sanctions. We don't recognize. This is why Europe is really, I mean, they were already in a recession.
Right.
But they really fell down last year with all the sanctions. And you're going to see the geopolitical changing of the guard. And it's starting with oil. But you're also seeing commodity prices go down. You see the stock market. Now that people are back from the holidays, volume is going back up in the stock market, and they're saying, you know what, we see the writing on the wall, we're out of here.
Can you explain that to people who might not understand, like myself? How are those events correlated, more volume and then people starting to leave?
Well, since 2008, pretty much 75% of all trading on the equity markets, the Dow, the S&P, NASDAQ, 75% of it is high-frequency trading computers.
Right, okay.
Not retail investors. Well, if there's no – the HFT computers, what they do is they look at all the trades and the trends that are going, mm-hmm. and they get in that trade before the regular – create liquidity and create volume and create motion.
Right.
If somebody's selling, then they're going to get in first and they're going to dump their shares first. Or what they do, what the computers do is they buy them from the market maker. They take add a little premium to it, and then they sell it to you. That's mm-hmm. how they do it. And they do that a billion times a day.
Right.
So anyway, if there's no volume, then these high-frequency trading computers aren't really doing a lot of function. So if there's no selling, then it's just going to slowly tick up and slowly tick up on no volume.
Okay.
Well, when the people come with volume and you see any type of selling start to happen, then it kicks in the high-frequency trained computers, and the selling becomes magnified.
Ah, okay. That makes sense to me. Okay. What about the, we had that article last week about the robo-controlled hedge funds. I know I'm kind of getting off a little topic here, but did you see that article saying that they've got hedge funds now that are completely run by computer, and that one of them returned, I think, almost 70% of investment this year? I mean, it seems like the casino has gotten so high tech now that you couldn't possibly succeed as an investor unless you knew somebody who knew somebody who designed the system that allowed the front running. You know what I mean?
Oh no, I will say this right now. If you are in the paper markets, and that includes your mutual funds, your 401ks, and your allowing broker, there is nothing equitable about anything having to do with paper. Nothing. Everything is manipulated. Everything is rigged.
Right.
All you have to do is go out and Google search LIBOR manipulation, gold and silver manipulation, stock market manipulation, bond market manipulation. This is why J.P. Morgan got fined 21 times over the last two and a half years for like $12 billion because of all these manipulations.
Right.
So everything is rigged. Everything is manipulated. And it's all done to protect the quadrillion-dollar derivative market. That's why they're protecting it. Every single piece of paper out there, every security has, you know, thousands of derivatives tied to it. So it's not the security itself that the bankers are worried about or the Fed's worried about. It's all these derivative insurance policies that if that security collapses, it automatically triggers these derivatives.
Right.
If the security goes up, it triggers derivatives on the other side. So, you know, everything is hinged. And what you think, as a matter of fact, I don't know if you know the story about the DTCC.
We do know the story about the DTCC pretty well, actually, at Red Bill Reports.
Hurricane Sandy in that?
No, well, if you could extrapolate on that detail. I don't know if I know that one.
Okay. The DTCC pretty much owns every stock certificate out there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's where they all go to be categorized, et cetera, et cetera. If you ask for your stock certificate, you'll never get it anymore. Those days are long gone.
Right.
Well, if you have a centralized place, certificates, then they can easily just use a computer, numbers, add, whatever, and leverage even the stock certificates. So for every single share of stock that's out on the exchange, it's been sold about 5 or 10 times already.
Right.
This is one of the reasons why the stock market is so high, is because there's upwards of 5 to 10 times the actual number of stock shares that are actually viably there. And what ended up happening was after Hurricane Sandy, everything was down in a vault, a fireproof, waterproof vault. Hurricane Sandy comes along. Oh, we didn't realize we left the vault door open.
Oh, we are so stupid.
Yeah, and so the floodwaters came in and just, you know, devastated. But I guess it didn't get everything because 2 weeks later, we had a fire in there.
Oh, my God. What are the odds? You know, talk about bad luck.
You know, it's like 9/11. You know what was significant about building number 7?
Had $200 billion in gold underneath it?
Yeah, it was the world's largest bank.
Yeah.
It was the world's largest bank. And so you steal everything from it, you bring the thing down, and then you collect the insurance on it. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good job if you can get it, you know?
Yeah, you know, so everything is rigged, everything is manipulated. But if you notice something, the bonds are collapsing. The stock market is about to, there we go, S&P 500 below 2,000.
Yep.
We haven't had a correction in three and a half years thanks to quantitative easing. But there's one thing that is up today, and that's the one true safe place, and that's gold.
Yeah, it is way up today. Yep. 1238 right now for an ounce. That's a pretty big jump over the last few days, actually.
Last couple of days, but if you noticed, on par, we're positive about 8 to 9 out of 10 days over the past month.
Mm-hmm.
So the world is seeing that as a safe haven, not bonds. Well, everybody rushed into bonds, But the yield on bonds, no more. You know, they're just, nobody wants them anymore.
Right.
Stock market is not to be trusted. You're left with, commodity market is collapsed.
Bitcoin took a major dive last night. It was, we're sitting at 186 for a Bitcoin. That's well below that $200 level, which I think everybody was considering to be that next psychological level after 250. So Bitcoin, and that's surprising to me too, with the announcement from Overstock the other day that they're going to allow their employees to be paid in Bitcoin. I thought for sure that would at least give a little bit of a boost to Bitcoin, and we see, you know, a fairly significant sell-off happening there too. So again, it is unusual that gold seems to be at the forefront of the safe haven market right now.
Well, what we're finding is there's just most of the money that's been used to manipulate these markets, it's being put elsewhere. So gold and silver are being left alone. Plus the fact that the dirty little secret is that the COMEX has no gold. The futures market that is supposed to sell contracts for delivery has not delivered a single ounce of gold or silver in over 2 years.
What? Are you serious?
Yes. They have not delivered a single ounce, even though there are massive buy contracts, but most of those buy contracts are probably owned by China or Russia.
Okay.
And they're not taking delivery because they know that the moment that they take delivery, it will collapse the futures market. So they're just rolling it over and rolling it over. And they're saving that Trump card. I mean, if they want to get the U.S., all they have to do is demand delivery.
Right.
COMEX will not have it. They'll declare a default. They'll say, we'll have to give you in cash. COMEX no longer controls spot price. And that's up for grabs, and it'll probably go to the Shanghai Gold Exchange, which will instantly raise the value of gold about two or three times, because right now in Shanghai Gold Exchange in Asia, large purchases of gold are going with a premium of between $300 and $600.
Really?
Yeah, you're paying upwards of $1,800 right now for an ounce of gold when you buy it by the tonnage or, you know, kilos and things like that, because the fact of the matter is that supply is virtually not there, and if the COMEX isn't delivering, they can get away with manipulating the spot price down.
Okay.
The one thing about gold, more than anything, is it reveals the solvency of a fiat currency.
What's your source on that price in Asia? Someone's asking me from the chat room, just out of curiosity.
Well, there's a Visa Gorilla Economist. You can YouTube some of his recent shows, or out on freedomslips.com.
Right.
Also, Jim Willie. Some of his. If you go to a guy named Paul Sandhu, S-A-N-D-H-U, he does some interviews about once a month with Jim Willie, and over the last couple ones, he's verified that as well.
Okay. Does that affect the silver market there as well?
Yes, not as much, because Asia is big, big, big on gold. And only recently, when there was a lot of restrictions done in the Indian market, that India started buying up silver by the boatload.
Right.
But those restrictions under the new prime minister have been removed, so they're going back to gold. Gold's their standard.
Now, obviously, a lot of speculation about the BRICS banks coming together and potentially having a gold-backed, or at least a partially gold-backed currency with them. Do you see that kind of coming down the pipe? Do you think that why Russia and China are hoarding gold the way that they are, or, you know, what do you think is going to be happening with that BRICS bank development?
Oh yeah, the BRICS bank is already out there. Mm-hmm. It's just not as big. As a matter of fact, there's three different entities that have been created. There's the AIIB, which is the Asian Investment Bank. Mm-hmm. There's the BRICS Bank, and then there's also the Silk Road Fund.
Okay.
You also have in Russia, you have the Eurasian Economic Zone that's been created, and that was started in October, and they've got about five countries, but you're going to get a lot more. What they're doing is they're creating free trade zones. And in this free trade zone, you're going to have a centralized thing. You know how the dollar is the reserve currency for the world?
Right.
Well, they're going to get rid of individual currencies, and you're going to be purchasing trade notes backed by gold. And you have to physically have that gold stored within the center of the sphere of influence in the Eurasian zone.
Okay.
So you could either have it validated, stored in a vault. But what it's going to do is it's going to give you access to a trade note. And if you want to think about a trade note, it's really a letter of credit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever done, or if anybody's ever done with shipping. Say you're a company in the United States, and your stuff is being produced in China. What you would do is you would have on in your bank, you would go to your bank, which is a specialized bank, like a customs bank.
Okay.
And you say, I want to get a letter of credit for X million dollars for purchase of this stuff. Then you would send that letter of credit would be sent to China, where they're sitting there with a boat in the harbor loaded. Once they get that letter of credit, it's not actually money. It's just a validation that you have the money on account.
Right. It's a fancy check, essentially.
Exactly. And then they ship your goods to you, and then they turn that letter of credit into the bank, and the bank sends the money once you receive it.
Right. Okay.
So that's a letter of credit when it comes to shipping goods. A gold-backed trade note is virtually the same thing, only it's done at a sovereign level, government to government versus company to company.
Okay.
And it's going to say, hey, we want to do trade with you. We've got this gold-backed note. And China's going to sit there and go, hey, Argentina, you've got all this copper and tin in that. We want $2 billion worth of your raw materials. And in exchange with this gold-backed trade note, we will sell you $2 billion worth of goods that you want.
Uh-huh.
And that's how it's going to work.
Okay.
And if you don't want $2 billion worth of goods, then you keep that the difference on account. But either way, that difference is backed by gold on both sides.
Wow. So really, the BRICS bank is going to be, in my opinion, then more secure than what we've seen from the IMF. And it's probably going to – I mean, I can't imagine if you were in that region and someone presented you with an option of having, gold-backed notes and a way to actually fund transactions where there was an actual wealth of value stored. You know, who wouldn't want to be involved with that, and, especially given the circumstances today? Ken, we've got to take a quick short 3-minute break. We are going to be right back. Ken Ashorjan Jr. is our guest of TheDailyEconomist.com. Please, everybody, go check out TheDailyEconomist.com. We're going to be back after this quick 3-minute break. This is your Daily Dose of Deprogramming. Be right back, guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money, has a storage life of 100 years, all for about $18 a month? Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now, only at hempusa.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods, but what about when the food runs out? What then?
For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence, and the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same-day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Sundays, Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We're moving into the second segment of our with our guest today, Mr. Kenneth Shorjan Jr. of the DailyEconomist.com. We're very thankful for him coming and giving us all this unique insight about economic developments and geopolitical developments around the world. Ken, before the break, we were kind of just starting to talk a little bit about the BRICS Bank, and I have a lot of questions around the BRICS Bank because I know that the IMF and all of these Western-style banks really run by the Rothschilds and the Rockefeller Foundation, and or not the foundation, but the Rockefeller families, you know, and all of these kind of Illuminati type of clandestine banking groups. But one of the main motifs of their mentality is that competition is a sin. So I wonder, as we're starting to see this BRICS development, you know, getting a lot of steam, it's picking up members. There, you know, today there's an article at Russia Today about China and Russia setting up the Universal Credit Rating Group, which is going to be an existing, or will be rivaling the existing agencies like Moody's and S&P and Fitch. So they're really, really working hard to make this bank have a lot of legitimacy worldwide. Do you think it's going to be in competition with the IMF, or do you believe that it will be a replacement for the IMF, Ken?
Well, it's for competition. You got to, and I wrote an article on Examiner about that new rating agency yesterday.
Okay.
But something else that happened on just before the New Year's holiday, Russia opened up its alternative to SWIFT.
Right.
So what you're seeing is you're seeing every single component that the Western banking system uses being duplicated in the East. And what they're going to do is, before something can become mainstream, you need what's called critical mass. You need enough nations, enough governments, enough economies using something to reach that 51% critical mass that then it becomes permanent.
Okay.
So, you know, when you talk the BRICS, you have to look down, you have to call it the BRICS and Associates. Because the BRICS and Associates is not just the five member nations of BRICS. It's about 90 other countries who have signed on for one thing or another that the BRICS are offering.
Okay.
You have yuan currency swaps in at least 20, including Britain, Germany, et cetera. So you have now that the yuan moved up last year from doing 13% of global trade in the yuan to 24% of global trade.
Oh, okay.
And the dollar has moved down over the past decade, 15 years, from 43%. So you can see how this is changing. And once the yuan reaches that critical mass, then all of a sudden the world's going to see an alternative. Something else. The yuan is currently pegged to the dollar. So is the Hong Kong currency, which is, you know, Hong Kong is separate, but it's still part of China now after 97. Uh-huh. So you see Russia, the ruble is pegged to the dollar. A lot of these are currently pegged to the dollar. When they decide to freely trade and go off of that peg, that's when you know everything has changed.
Okay.
These countries are saying, our currency can stand on its own. We no longer need the dollar. And when you do trade with us, there will be no middleman. You don't go to the BIS to or SWIFT to go buy dollars so you can buy my oil and trade back into your currency. No, they want to get rid of the dollar as the middleman. The purpose behind the reserve currency was because of World War II. You had all these devastated economies all throughout the world, and only the dollar was really strong enough to handle global trade. And at Bretton Woods, the promise was is that the dollar will be the reserve currency, and it will be backed by gold, and it will be open at the gold window. As we got to the 1960s, the U.S. government in the military-industrial complex wanted to expand the monetary base beyond the amount of gold that they had. So that's when they started printing, printing money in mass.
Okay.
Well, when that started happening, because the dollar is a global currency, dollars abroad started causing inflation in their own country. And so they, places like France, especially France, Charles de Gaulle, he said, well, screw this. We want gold. And so they started taking their dollars and going to the gold window and getting all this gold. Well, by the time 1971 came about, nearly a dozen countries were demanding gold for dollars. They didn't want the dollar, and that's when Nixon took it off. Hmm. And the purpose was, of course, to fund Vietnam War, fund the Great Society, and there just wasn't enough dollars to do this. And when they talk about this big thing going on about, ooh, raise minimum wage, you know what the minimum wage was in the middle of the 1960s?
Like $1.25, but it would have been in silver, so it would have been about $26 an hour or something.
Yeah, exactly. It was $1.60 an hour.
Yeah,
and $1.60 an hour you could rent a nice place, you could have a car, you could have food and whatever. If you had two people in your house working at minimum wage, and most people didn't work at minimum wage, but say you had two people, a married couple working minimum wage, you could have a decent house, you could have a car. You could put your kids through school. Uh-huh. It was a livable wage because the it's not about the amount of currency. It's about what the purchasing power of that currency can do.
Right.
And so, you raise the price of, or the minimum wage up to $15 an hour, what is going to happen to all other prices? Companies are either going to get rid of people because they can't afford the labor costs,
right,
or they're going to raise prices for everybody else, and it becomes a moot point.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially at such a minimal amount like that. I mean, I think if we're going to raise minimum wage, everybody should be getting $100 an hour. If the money's going to be useless, we're just going to print it out of air anyway. We might as well just give people enough money to have a decent living, in the context of the society that we're in right now.
Well, the other side of the coin is in the socialism, fascism that we have in our government's mindset today. It's about equity of need. So a woman who has no skills, no high school diploma, but three kids, should get a higher wage than, say, somebody who went to college and has a master's in engineering,
right,
because he doesn't have all these mouths to feed.
Right.
It's not equitable.
Hmm.
So when you bring politics and you bring ideology and you bring agenda in here, that's where you get these emotional feeling type activism of raise the minimum wage. Well, why don't you get rid of the Fed, stop devaluing the dollar, and you wouldn't have to do anything with your money?
Or let us keep the 40% that we give up to income tax. How about that? That would be a pretty significant minimum wage increase, would it not?
Of course.
Yeah.
But
all right. Well, I want to get back on the BRICS Bank here because I have more questions, and I start dabbling into the kind of more conspiratorial elements, but I'm curious about some of the other nations that are kind of out there right now that might end up being folded into the BRICS Bank, places like places that have commodities that might, want to gravitate.
Australia.
Yeah, or Iran, places like that.
Iraq.
Do you think countries like those are going to be moving into BRICS?
Oh, they will eventually. But right now, Iraq and Afghanistan are under such siege from ISIS that they're not really doing anything.
Okay. What about the
Afghanistan, one of the reasons we went in Afghanistan is because it's estimated there are over $3 trillion worth of minerals.
Yes.
Not oil, but minerals. So.
Yeah, well, not to mention the $600 billion a year opium market as well. But, yeah, I think they did find $1 trillion in just lithium. I mean, Russia found it in the 80s. I mean, we rediscovered their report recently and decided that we had rediscovered $1 trillion of lithium that Russia had discovered back in the 80s. Anyway, so obviously this empire building regime motif is probably still going to be continuing going on into the future. But I was curious about what you thought about some of those other nations folding into BRICS. What about this idea, and I know this is super deep into the conspiratorial pool here, of a global currency reset? There's a lot of speculation, you know, in kind of the black hat, white hat arena that something might be moving towards us in terms of a global currency reset. Do you have any inclination or any thoughts on that, Ken?
Oh, God, yeah. As a matter of fact, it's real interesting you say that, because just before I got on the show here, I was in the process of writing an article that I'm going to publish. It's called The World Sees the U.S. as a Rogue Nation. Not Iran, but the U.S. Back in late 2013, and this has already been validated, but back in late 2013, about 120 member nations got together, and it was not really hush-hush per se, but it was not covered at all by the Western media.
Okay.
They got together to do a what was considered a currency reset, but it was going to be a little bit more. It was going to be, in fact, everything was going to be pegged to gold, and they were going to raise the price of gold 2 times and silver 3 times. Let me pull up some of my information here, what it was called. It was going to be called the Gold Standard Reinstallation Pact.
Okay.
Okay, and here's what happened. End of 2013, end of January 2014, there was to be a global currency reset. It was actually a kind of treaty, a financial accord pact,
right,
signed by 117 nations, including the United States, and it was meant to rejigger the currencies among themselves and, very importantly, double the price of gold and triple the silver price. It was going to change the world from using the dollar as a standard to using gold as the key standard that all currencies then. So after this currency reset and this move towards making gold the standard, if you print money to oblivion, then you're going to, you know, that's your fault.
Right.
That's the consequences of yours. See, in the past, what they did, the mindset was, especially FDR, is he got all the gold and then he priced the gold, you know, raised it from $20 to $42.20 an ounce. Well, that's not the way you have a gold standard. The way you have a gold standard is that gold is valued compared to how much currency money supply you have.
Okay.
So if you have a really strong currency, it's because you don't have a huge money supply in relation to the amount of gold you have. But if you have, like we've done, printing, you know, $4 trillion a year, what it does is it doesn't make your currency change, but it makes the price of gold in your currency change.
Okay, right.
So if we didn't manipulate gold and silver like we do, and being the reserve currency in the COMEX, we have power over the price, the spot price. If we didn't have that, then gold in dollars now would probably be between $9,000 and $15,000 per ounce.
Would that correlate then to a loss of purchasing power in the dollar equivalent to that then?
Oh, absolutely.
Ooh, yeah. That's scary.
But, here's the thing. You've got to remember the difference between dollars spent internally and dollars spent externally, internationally.
Okay.
Since we are a debtor nation, we have to import more than we export. So the world is forced right now because of the reserve currency to accept our dollar. If everything became based on gold and we devalued the currency to a certain point, then the world would say, you know, we don't have to accept your dollars. You're going to get less than because of the purchasing power from external goods, imported goods.
Oh,
internally,
right.
You know, it's all relative, because the problem has never been printing an exorbitant amount of money. Had we not had the Federal Reserve Act, and we had Congress printing money, then everything, we could have printed as much as we needed internally, and it wouldn't have mattered. As a matter of fact, think about this. This little island called Britain, they didn't even have internal money at the time of the rise of the British Empire. They used these sticks called tally sticks. Hmm. That's what they used for internal bartering and trade within, you know, local businesses and on the island.
Okay.
They were able to take a country that has no resources, nothing like that, using tally sticks for currency and create an empire.
Right.
Because they were able to control their internal economy by having the money supply controlled by the crown, not a central bank, the crown, and then their external trade was done in gold. And everything worked fine until 1694, when Rothschild went in there, conned the king and the parliament into using a central bank. Then everything became debt-based.
Right.
There is no money created. There's only debt created and then money printed off of that debt. So if we got rid of the central bank, we got rid of debt-based printing and just allow Congress to print as they see fit for internal thing, you wouldn't have inflation. You wouldn't have all this stuff just like you did from 1820, when Andrew Jackson killed the second bank. Mm-hmm. From about 1820 to 1870, if you take a look at the chart, the amount of inflation in the United States was virtually nil.
Wow. Well, then you got to think they're going to fight pretty hard to make sure that system doesn't go away. I mean, how far are we away from losing global reserve status of the dollar, you think?
One major crisis. I think it's also a matter of, I think it's going to take a war.
Okay.
And somebody is already preparing for that. I don't know if you also saw on RT today, but Japan, Shinzo Abe just signed a new military budget, $42 billion. Now, that might not seem that much, but that's the most spent on the military in Japan since the end of World War II, when they were de-armed by the U.S. and told that they, according to their constitution, that they couldn't fund an army. First time in 70 years, the highest budget. They are preparing for war because in any economic collapse, you see first currency wars. I like to call them, you know, in this era, it's not just currency wars, it's quantitative easing wars.
Right.
You know, Japan has been doing it for 20 years. Then the U.S. has been doing it for 6 years. Europe is just about to, the courts have just agreed to allow Mario Draghi to do a form of quantitative easing. And when that happens, I'm making a prediction. Count the days before Germany leaves the EU.
Really?
Yeah. Because the German Supreme Court had ruled that Draghi and the ECB do not have the power and the right to do this. So if the German Supreme Court has already said this, but an international court within the EU has already said, no, that's fine, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you've broken the treaty, and it gives Germany an out to leave the EU and the euro.
Wow.
And they're already preparing. There's a number of different places, Germany, Norway, I think Switzerland is out of it, but a few others in the north, they're already working on what they call a Nordic euro, and it's going to be gold back.
Oh, right. Wow. Boy, you need another reason to jump into gold right now, especially with the dollar index being so high and gold still. I mean, 1,200 still is pretty reasonable. Even 1,240, pretty reasonable. I can't imagine.
Reasonable, yeah. Oh, no. Gold and silver right now is that it's the equivalent of 1974 when silver was $1 an ounce,
right,
and gold was $130 an ounce, and you saw what happened 6 years later. The true value of gold right now should be between $9,000 and $15,000 for the amount of money that has been printed and increased through central banks, the debt-based money. All you got to do is look. The U.S. is completely insolvent, period. $18-plus trillion dollars in debt, and our GDP is only $14.9 trillion. We have more debt than we take in. That's the definition of bankrupt.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, that's the whole reason of the fiat currency in the first place. We're, you know, operating under an emergency declaration right now, which is, you know,
it's because of this that the Saudis have the opening to go after the U.S. Because they're not going to do, see, this is something else. What does the U.S. do to anybody who confronts it? What they do to Gaddafi in Libya? What they do in Egypt? What they do in Yemen? What are they doing in Syria? What they do in Iraq? Mm-hmm. If you confront the dollar, if you attack the dollar in any capacity, you will be overthrown and destroyed. That's the way it's been for the last 10, 15 years. So why, if Saudis and the OPEC are attempting to destroy the dollar, the fracking industry, and the petrodollar, why is the U.S. not going after them?
Right.
Because these are what part of the secret meetings are. They're not alone. If the U.S. decided to go after, either covertly or overtly like they did in Ukraine, Russia and China are going to suddenly, and Iran probably, are going to suddenly step up there and go, okay, now you're facing four. You want a nuclear war?
Right. Well, I want to get back to the idea of this global currency reset and the gold standard reinstallation. What happened there? Where's that program at now? And why, you know, why hasn't that been activated?
Well, what ended up happening is, getting back to the article I was writing earlier, all these 117 countries agreed to do this, but the United States instead pulled back, reneged on the treaty, that pact they had signed, and instead started the Ukraine war. So the U.S. is not willing to give up its control over the reserve currency,
right,
to the detriment of everybody else, because the reserve currency would have been gold, not the dollar anymore. The U.S. would have been relegated because they're no longer the number one economy in the world. That's China. They don't have the resources per se that Russia and a few others do. So all of a sudden, the U.S. would be relegated to non-solo superpower status, and the arrogance in Washington just wasn't going to do that.
Right.
So they're willing to go down in flames to hold this thing together. So it's going to require something big. It's going to require something big. And I think it's, like I said, it's going to be critical mass. It's going to be the Western countries isolating the United States and saying, you know, we're done with you. We're going to go ahead and join up with the Eurasian Trade Zone. We're going to join up with the BRICS. We're going to join up with Asia. And we are willing to go. And this is why Germany wanted to repatriate their gold. If you notice, Germany repatriated their gold just before the Ukraine war hit, because what I think happened is they heard from the U.S. that the U.S. was going to back away from this global currency reset.
Okay.
And they were told that, hey, instead we're going to create a war. We're going to keep the thing going by creating war. And Germany said, I don't want to get involved in that. We want our gold back. And the U.S. didn't have the gold, so they had to use all these excuses. Well, it goes back to how did Holland suddenly get their gold? How did the Dutch get their gold? 122 tons. Well, what do the Dutch have that could be very, very dire to the United States? They've got the black box from MH17 that was shot down over Ukraine.
Oh, wow. That's a good point. I hadn't even thought of that.
They've got all the information, and I'm pretty sure they used that card saying, hey, we know it's in the black box.
Right.
We know all this communication. We know who was involved. You give us our gold, or we're going to go public with this.
Wow.
And the gold was sent, like, overnight.
Right. Wow. And then, we saw the theft of gold from the Ukraine pretty much immediately after the junta was installed there.
Yeah, but there's another thing we got to look at. There's another European country that's really being attacked by all sides right now, because I think they're hedging towards the side of Russia and the BRICS, and that's France.
So you think this whole terrorist attack might have been a result of that?
Well, this Paris attack came 3 days after President Hollande publicly stated that if these sanctions against Russia need to end, And if we find out, see, they're meeting on today's 14th or 15th?
14th.
Tomorrow they're meeting in Astana to talk about seeing what they can do to thaw out, you know, and come to some sort of agreement with over Ukraine. Russia's going to be there and a few other countries.
Okay.
Hollande said if there's any movement towards the, you know, coming to an understanding in Ukraine, even a slightest movement in the positive measure, we're going to end sanctions.
Hmm.
Okay. Hollande already said we're going to end sanctions if Russia is willing to come to the table with over Ukraine. 3 days later, this terror attack occurs.
Right.
Okay. What else happened? PNB Paribas. PNB Paribas, about a year ago, was fined by the Department of Justice. Now, what the heck is the Department of Justice having the right to sue and fine a sovereign French bank?
That's a good question.
Okay. It was over because PNB Paribas was doing the transactions between Iran, when Iran was under sanctions, between Iran and Russia.
Okay.
A virtual oil for food type thing.
Right. Okay.
And so as France has been wavering more towards leaving the EU and leaving the Western side and moving over towards the BRICS, the U.S. put pressure on them. So you had the BNP Paribas. What else happened? Like I said, we had the Saudi prince who was hijacked in middle of Paris by professionals.
Right.
This is not burglars, you know, doing this. This is a intelligence service that did this.
Right.
We also have the head of Total, which is the largest French oil company, Christophe de Margerie, who was mysteriously killed in outside of Moscow when his plane was hit by a snowblower that was on the tarmac.
I do remember reading that. Wow.
Okay. This guy was already – him and Putin were going to establish new oil agreements that were outside the dollar. And then, of course, we have this. So we have four incidents where France was looking to move away from dollar hegemony and the U.S. and end sanctions and move into Russia's camp, and every single time something major was done to them,
wow,
either overtly or covertly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly is. It's got to stay on the table as a possibility. I was kind of considering a Mossad retaliation for France acknowledging even just ceremoniously that they wanted Palestine to get statehood. So there's a lot more going on with that France situation, I think you've been told. Ken, thank you so much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports today.
Thanks, JD.
Absolutely.
Pleasure.
Look forward to talking to you again in the future. Tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, Deborah Tavares will be joining us. So we'll have another very in-depth conversation tomorrow.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Real people, real radio.